Thank you so much for joining us tonight for our presentation. Dr. Christina Lee is tonight's presenter, and she's going to be providing us with an overview of a solar storm at Mars. Dr. Lee is a research assistant research physicist at UC Berkeley's Space Science Laboratory. She received her PhD in Earth and Planetary Science and Space Physics from UC Berkeley before working as a postdoc at the Air Force Research Lab, then at Boston College. So her work on the MAVEN mission is devoted to understanding the effects of space weather events on the upper atmosphere and at the surface of Mars, and we're delighted to have her here with us. So, Dr. Lee, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you for inviting me to participate in this webinar. So should I go ahead and share screen at this point?
Yes, that would be great. Go ahead.
Let me do that. Share screen. Let's see. So maybe I should maximize this. Can everyone see my whole screen? I'm not sure if anything got chopped off.
Yes.
Okay. It looks pretty good. It looks good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, today I'll talk about the big solar storm that happened in September 2017, over a year ago. So let me just dive right in, because I think I want to make sure I keep track of time here. So just a really, really brief intro about Mars. You know, we live on planet Earth, of course. You know, people always ask me, like, just some facts about Mars. So here's some facts, you know. So the diameter of Mars is 53% of Earth, and its mass is 10% of Earth. And there's no volcanic activity at this point, unlike Earth, and it pretty much stopped like 3 billion years ago. The gravity is also lower on Mars as well, 38% of Earth's gravity. And so the escape velocity is really low. And because of that, the atmosphere of Mars can escape pretty easily. So why am I talking about this? Part of it is because the space weather will have an influence on all this, on the atmosphere of Mars. One of the factors that leads to atmosphere escape of Mars, which is a big topic that everyone likes to study, is in part because there's no global magnetic field at Mars, unlike planet Earth. So that's what I'm showing here in the graphics. This is sort of a cartoon illustration of what we call the dipole magnetic field at Earth. And hopefully you can see my mouse moving around the figure. This is what we have at Earth. At Mars, we don't have a global magnetic field. Instead, we have these little, what we call crystal magnetic fields, mostly in the southern hemisphere. Atmosphere at Mars is also very thin. Basically, if we were to live at Mars, it's kind of like living in the stratosphere of Earth. So that's what the bottom graphic is showing on the slide. And so the lack of a global field and a thin atmosphere, those two combined means that there's not a lot of protection at Mars. So protection from what? Okay, so one is, you know, protection from space weather events. So this is a cartoon, it's very complicated, but what I'm trying to just illustrate here is what happens when the sun is very active. And so if you look in the upper left, you have a figure of the sun and something labeled called CME, it's coronal mass ejection. So when you have eruptions of the sun, this sort of this bubble of mass, charged particles, magnetic fields, just kind of erupts off the sun and just goes radially outward into the solar system. With that, you have something called SEPs. That's solar energy particles. And they stream along the magnetic field lines that are emanating throughout the solar system. You also have from the sun EUV, extreme ultraviolet. So that, you know, imparts photons everywhere, so also on the atmosphere of Mars. So but bottom line is there's a lot of energetic input into Mars, and without a global magnetic field protecting it with a thin atmosphere, a lot of these energetic inputs can have some interesting effects, different than those what we experience at Earth. And one big question I talked about earlier was, you know, what's the atmospheric loss at Mars right now? And this leads to, you know, where does the water at Mars go? I'm not going to talk about that topic. That in itself is a big topic that I'm not an expert on. But that's one of the motivation for studying space weather at Mars, studying the, you know, what, you know, the effects of solar storms at Mars. The other motivation for studying space weather is, of course, there's all this interest to send humans to Mars, to colonize Mars, to live there. And so with a thin atmosphere and no global magnetic field to shield energetic particles, for example, there's, you know, harmful radiation at the surface. So unlike us living at Earth, we have this global magnetic field sort of shielding us from galactic cosmic ray particles, GCRs. At Mars, that's not the case. The GCRs, these highly energized particles, they will reach the surface. And if you live on Mars, you know, what are the impacts of the radiation over a long period of time? And this is also a question that people ask, you know, in terms of when we travel to Mars, that, you know, that is also, can be dangerous too. So there are people in the community trying to assess the radiation dosage, and what are the implications for, you know, traveling to Mars and living on Mars for a certain period of time. Okay. So the topic of this talk is the solar storm, and particularly the one that occurred last year in September. So what I'm showing here on the left is a figure taken by the Solar Dynamics Observatory, SDO, that is near Earth. There's an imager on there, and that's what you're seeing here, an image. And it's a funny color of the sun because the image is taken with a particular filter to bring out certain features. But what I really want to show and draw your attention to is this bright feature on the right-hand side of the sun. So right-hand side in solar heliospheric lingo is what we call the west limb. I'll try to avoid using that. So if you look on the right-hand side of this figure, you see the sort of bright splotch. That's actually an eruption of what we call a solar flare. So solar flare, different from a CME, solar flare is a very localized eruption that doesn't propagate outward into the solar system. It's near an active region of the sun, and it's just it's an eruption that's fixed at the sun. So it's a solar flare. And what was really striking about the solar flare for those at Earth, also for Mars, is that this solar flare was very long duration, lasted an hour, and it was very, very strong. So kind of, if you think of earthquakes and Richter scales, you know, this is what we call the X-class flare. So there's like B-class, C-class, M-class, and this X-class. So it was very strong. What I'm showing here on the right is a movie of the, also from SDO, but at a different wavelength. And it's showing this. So while we have an X-class flare going on at this active region of the sun, there's also CME eruptions, and that's what I'm showing in this movie. And I'll show it again. So the CME was very fast, and it was sort of very strong, and you can see, maybe you can't, but there was actually a shockwave that propagated across the surface of the sun. So in the solar community, this was a very exciting event in itself for solar physics. Okay. Now, I'm showing a cartoon here, to illustrate what I said earlier. So you have a solar flare. This is an event that is local at the sun. You know, there's an eruption that goes on. That's a solar flare. And you also have this big bubble here, which is the CME. So I show up here in the upper left just an image of a solar loop. So this is not a CME, but it could be. If it were to erupt off the sun. And for scale, you can see planet Earth right here. I don't know if you see this little dot, but that's planet Earth. So this gives you a sort of scales of how big these loops from the sun are. Okay, so back to this cartoon. You have something called a CME event, this coronal mass ejection that's going on, the solar flare. And what I want to sort of emphasize here is this concept of magnetic connection to these events. So the sun, you know, there's magnetic field emanating from the sun, and it goes all over the solar system. And you can think of it as field lines. And so these field lines aren't going straight. If you were to take a snapshot of it, it's actually kind of like creates a spiral structure. So you can think of it as like a water hose in a garden. If you took a water hose that's, you know, flowing with water out, and you start spinning it, it creates sort of the spiral shape. So you can think of the interplanetary magnetic field from the sun having a similar shape as a spiral configuration. We call it Parker spiral. Okay, so what you see here are these blue lines sort of giving a cartoon configuration of the interplanetary magnetic field curve spiral. and you have planet Earth here, sort of stuck to one of these lines. So that's what I mean by magnetic connection. And if you trace this field line from Earth back to the Sun, that's what I mean when I'm saying magnetically connected back to the source. In this case, this the flare or CME. So I hope that you can sort of have this cartoon picture in your mind as I'm talking about this event, because that'll be important. Okay, so basically for this in this cartoon, but also for the September event, Earth was actually magnetically connected to the source region back of the Sun, where the flare activity occurred, where the CME eruption occurred. And so Earth actually saw some really intense energetic particles. So I talked about the figure on the left, now I'm talking about the figure on the right. So this is a movie stitched together using images from a coronagraph on board SOHO, which is an observatory upstream of Earth. So it's kind of near Earth. And you can see this bright sort of bubble coming off to the right-hand side. That's the CME. And you can see sort of this sort of snowstorm, like a bombardment in the movie. That's actually the solar energetic particles hitting the camera. And this occurred tens of minutes after the CME erupted locally from the Sun. And so because of this magnetic connections of Earth to the source region back of the Sun, you can see the energetic particles right away. Now, these energetic particles, they're charged, so they're bound to the magnetic field line. So they kind of gyrate along the magnetic field lines, the electrons and the protons. So they can't just go off in any direction. They have to kind of follow the field lines. And so Earth is magnetically connected to the source region, to the CME, and the CME, you know, moving out really fast, accelerating energetic particles. And so you see these SEPs, these energetic particles, hitting the camera. Let's see. Let me stop to answer questions if there are any. Okay, I'm seeing Christine shaking her hands. Okay, I'll keep going. Okay, so this is a time series that I put together. So let me focus on the left side first. On the left column, labeled A, put POV, point of view from Earth. This is a still image of the Sun from SDO. And I kind of labeled here AR, the active region, and the CME loop. So you can sort of see the CME going off early on. So this is kind of like, I put the timestamp here on September 10th. And below it is a still frame of the last movie that I just showed of the CME. So you can see some of the energetic particles already hitting the coronagraph at this point, but they're still streaming down the field lines, and at some point it's going to be like a snowstorm looking scene. On the right hand side of this figure set, I'm showing similar images from a different observer, so not Earth, but stereo. So if you look at the far right figure here, I kind of show three observers. You have Earth, so this figure is basically looking down on the ecliptic plane. You're looking more or less over the North Pole of Earth, okay, so you can think of that. And so here's Earth. Here's Mars, so if the Sun's in the middle, I label AR for active region, sort of to give you an idea where is the solar activity coming off of. And here's something called, I label STA, that's stereo A. So there's this other spacecraft that's along the orbit of Earth, but separated away from Earth, and it's just orbiting around. At some point, it'll kind of meet up with Earth again, but it'll kind of go along its merry way. Anyway, stereo A also has a coronagraph, and it has imagers of the Sun, and I'm showing similar figures here of the CME at the bottom and also of the active region at the top here. Okay, on the far right-hand side, I'm showing some time series, and the point is I wanted to sort of emphasize that Earth saw the energy particles really early on, pretty much within tens of minutes after the coronal mass ejection occurred. And so you see the sort of like very prompt arrival of energy particles, very straight up, and then you see the particles, the count of the particles kind of dropping down over time. Mars also saw these solar energetic particles, and so this stereo A. And I'll kind of get into the Mars observations throughout this presentation, but the point I wanted to have you take away was that there were three observers during this event that measured energetic particles, which is quite exciting in the solar and heliosphere community, because it's not often that we have assets throughout the inner solar system measuring things. So that's exciting for that community. Okay, any questions? Okay, if not, I'm going to go on to the simulation. Okay, let's focus on the left-hand side of this simulation. Okay, you're looking down on the ecliptic plane again, and I have labeled here planet Earth. You have Mars on the left side here where my mouse is hovering. You have Stereo A, and you can see these sort of moving dash white and black lines here. That's just to illustrate the magnetic connection of the observer back to the sun. Okay, what is the simulation showing? Okay, the colors are showing the solar winds. So the solar winds all over the solar system, and it's just charged particles emanating from the sun, and embedded in the solar wind is the interplanetary magnetic field. And that's what the colors show. And this simulation was made for an entire month of September. So this active region that I talked about earlier at the sun, it actually stayed on, it was at the sun for quite a long time. So active regions of the sun can appear in the sun, and it can stay for one solar rotation, it can stay for half a solar rotation, it can stay for many solar rotations. And this is what happened in this case. This active region actually was stuck around, no pun intended, on the sun for several months. Like, we started seeing the active region back in June of 2017, and we kept monitoring it. Every time the sun rotated back and we saw the active region, we made note of it. One rotation later, we saw the active region again, and in September, it became super active. And so, as a result of this activity, there's all these CMEs that, you know, erupted from the sun, and we got all this sort of space weather activity in the solar system. So the one that impacted Mars erupted from September 10th. Here you go, right here. So it was actually a series of three CMEs. So here's some still frames of this movie that I just showed. And I'm focusing on the time frame between September 10th, so that's panel A, through September 13th, that's panel F. So I'm showing sort of 12-hour snapshots of the movie shown previously. And I labeled here in each one the CME. So I said CME 1 plus 2, because this is actually two sort of wimpy CMEs that erupted late on September 9th and early September 10th. And then the big one happened later on September 10th. So because the first two CMEs were kind of slow and wimpy, by the time the September 10th CME that occurred later in the day, by the time that erupted, that was really fast. It actually caught up with the first two CMEs and sort of merged behind it to create sort of a merged CME structure. And the prediction from the simulations predicted for the impact at Mars to be on September 13th. And so I like to use these simulations in my research, partly because it gives sort of a global context of what's going on in the inner solar system, also gives some context for the measurements that are being made at Mars, but also at Earth. And I like to sort of have a big picture understanding of what's going on. So I use these simulations a lot. And these simulations, if people care to know, are from the model called Wang Shili RG. They're the last names of three people who over time developed this simulation tool. And it's coupled with the solar wind model called Enlil. So WZ-Enlil for people who are interested and learning more about this modeling system that I'm showing here. Okay, so what I want to highlight here is panel F. So this is the prediction for Mars, and the prediction said that, you know, we're not going to get impacted until around September 13 at Mars. And if you go back to panel A, I also want to emphasize two things. One is, if you look at Earth, you know, Earth has this, you know, black and white dash line threaded through it. And you can see that if you trace it back to the sun, or near the sun, you can see that Earth was magnetically connected to the activity region in September last year. Whereas Earth, if you look over here for Mars, if you look at Mars, if you trace the field line back to the sun, it was not magnetically connected to the CME, nor the flare It was never connected to the flare site, but it was not magnetically connected to the seam until much later on. So I want you to keep that in mind. Okay. Now, this event was neat also because this was the first time that there were a number of assets around Mars that was able to make measurements. So we have MAVEN, which is the Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution spacecraft orbiting around Mars. We also had Mars Express, called MEX, also orbiting around Mars. And there was also, at the surface, the Mars Science Laboratory making measurements. So what I'm going to show in the next set of slides are the measurements from these three missions. Now, there are other spacecraft orbiting Mars as well. Now, you have Mars Odyssey. There's also Trace Gas Orbiter, but I'm not going to show the measurements from those missions. Okay. And just one more thing. You know, there was, prior to this event, the biggest event that the Mars community knew about, that I always get excited about, is what we call this Halloween Halloween event that occurred in 2003. But at the time, only the Mars Global Surveyor was around and the Mars Odyssey was around, but it didn't have the suite of instruments that were available from MAVEN, MX, and also MSL. So that's another reason why this was a very exciting event for the Mars community to study. Okay, so this is a complicated plot, and don't get too bothered about the details. I'll kind of go over each panel, but in a general sense. So these are the observations from MAVEN, MEX, and MSL sort of stacked together. And part of my research was to figure out from all the little pieces of measurements that we get, sort of like a puzzle for me, like, you know, what do we see? When did things happen? You know, I see what was happening to the sun, and I can use the WSAN-LOW model to sort of give me an approximation for when things may occur at Mars. But what do the instruments actually measure? Keeping in mind that the instruments are, you know, just a single point, you know, in space, whether it's in the orbit around Mars or at the surface. So this is just a small piece of the puzzle, but any measurement that we can get can help us to better understand some of the space weather effects from a solar storm. Okay, so panel A at the top shows a time series. So x-axis is time, and what I'm showing on panel A is just a measurement of what we call solar irradiance from the EEV monitor on MAVEN. This is basically measuring flare activity. And so Mars actually observed the flare measurements at Mars from EEVM. And that's very exciting because this is the first simultaneous measurement of a flare at Mars and at Earth. But what I'm showing here is just Mars. And I labeled the magenta line here F for flare. If you trace it down, I'm highlighting two panels here. So first on panel K. And this is just a temperature measurement at 170 kilometers. And what I'm trying to point out is that, you know, when this flare occurred, the photons, you know, hit the Martian atmosphere and the temperature increased. And at the bottom, the panel below that, panel L, you can see measurements from the neutral gas and ion, NGIMS, instrument, making measurements at a higher altitude, 195 kilometers, and they also see a temperature increase. And so what this panel L is showing is are the argon measurements. And why are we looking at argon? Well, argon is an inert gas, so it's a nice indicator when you see changes in argon temperatures that there are changes happening in the upper atmosphere. And that's what I'm this is just a cartoon showing the layers of the different atmosphere of Mars and what the components make up the different layers. So in this case, you can see argon in the upper atmosphere and what they call the well-mixed atmosphere. And when you see argon temperatures increase, you can pretty much know that the atmosphere, the neutral atmosphere also increased in the temperature. Okay, the next panels that I'm showing are the energy particles, the SEPs. So I'm showing in panels B and C The measurements that are made by two instruments, one on board MAVEN by the SWIA instrument, and one by MEX, the ASPRA-3 EMA instrument. And what this is basically showing is that now these instruments, they don't directly measure the energy of the particles, but when energy particles go through the housing of the instrument and hit the detector, they see as an increase in the background counts. And that's what you're seeing in this plot here. They saw an increase in the background counts. And for SWIA, this is caused by protons with a few tens of mega electron volts, so MeV, and also could be from electrons as well, a few MeV electrons. The MEX instrument saw an increase in the background counts from 20 MeV protons and from greater than 1 MeV electrons. The panel right below that is from another MAVEN instrument called the STEP instrument. It's unfortunate. It's a STEP instrument measuring steps. And I'm showing just two time series here to highlight that it measured an increase in the count rate from two populations of protons, basically the 15 to 100 MeV protons and the those that are larger, the 80 to 220 MeV protons. Okay, at the bottom, oops, let's see. Okay, so, So here I want to highlight the observations from MEX. So MEX has been around Mars since 2004. So it's been making measurements for quite a long time. And it's been continuously measuring background counts when there's energetic events going on. But this was the first time that the team members were able to sort of cross-calibrate measurements from MAVEN with their own instruments. So this is really cool. And the point of this figure is to just highlight the fact that this was the fourth largest SEP event that was measured by MEX since they've been around. So so Robin Ramsay did some work on this, and he pointed out three bigger events that happened earlier in 2005, 2011, and 2012. So this is the fourth biggest event measured by MEX, but this is the first event that's sort of simultaneously measured by another instrument on another mission. So this is a really neat result. Okay, so energetic particles, they're hitting the atmosphere of Mars, but only the most energetic ones can actually reach the surface of Mars. And if we're talking about protons, then the proton would need at least 150 MeV energies to reach the surface. So this is what this cartoon is sort of showing here on the left. And the you see the two curved lines here sort of to mimic the, you know, Parker spiral, the interplanetary magnetic field line, the curvature of it. It's color-coded by the time series here because I'm showing two population of measurements here of protons. But the point is, the lower energy, the 15 and 100 MeV protons, for example, will only hit the atmosphere of Mars, whereas the sort of the higher energy, the let's say 220 MeV protons can actually hit the surface. So that's what this cartoon is showing here. And what I'm pointing to the bottom panel are the measurements from MSL, the radiation detector. So the MSL RAD, they make measurements at the surface, and they're constantly measuring the radiation from galactic cosmic rays. That's always there in the background. And there's a solar energetic particle event that occurs, they can actually measure an increase in their dose rates, and that's what you see here. So if you're following along, if you follow the, you see the blue vertical dashed line here, label E at the top, that's for energetic particle, at least I marked the onset, the beginning of the event measured at Mars. And if you trace it down, you can see, you know, MSL RAD measuring a dose rate, and you see an enhancement, starting just before September 11th. And they see an enhancement because apparently, greater than 100 MeV, 50 MeV particles, protons, reached the surface. And so they saw this enhancement in their background. And that was very exciting for them. This was the fifth event that they measured, and by far the largest enhancement they've seen so far. And they've been around since 2012. Okay, so the enhancement that they saw was a factor of 2 or 2 to 3 above the background counts. And I color-coded so that you can see the sort of cartoon again on the right-hand side here. And now the lines are color-coded by the time series in blue and green, showing the same population of particles measured by MAVEN. So you can see sort of the timing of when MSL saw enhancement on the ground and the timing of when MAVEN in orbit measure an increase in their count rates from these higher energy protons. And if you notice the time series here for MSL-RAD, you can see the enhancement going on and you see a decrease here. I'll get to that in a little bit. Okay. So I talked earlier about the motivation for why do we study space weather at Mars? And one of them was, you know, we want to send humans to Mars one day to live there, to explore. And so how much radiation exposure will an explorer get in orbit, in transit, and also if they're living at the surface? Okay, so this bar graph shows sort of the dose equivalent measured in units of millisieverts. At the bottom here, you can see different categories of dose measurements. So if you start from the left, the annual cosmic ray dose you get is you know, less than, you know, it's around 0.3 millisieverts. And if you make your way all the way to the right, the red bar, that's, you know, how much dose will you get if you spent 500 days on Mars? And this value for the dose was measured by MSL-RAD. And the bar next to it, the orange one, is, you know, how much will you get if you spent 180 days leaving Earth and then traveling to Mars? So the dose is actually pretty high compared to what you would get just living here on planet Earth, the far left one, just from cosmic rays that sort of make it, the radiation that you get from cosmic rays. And, you know, versus if you had an abdominal CT scan, which is this blue bar right here. Okay. And if you look on the far right, I kind of label in arrows, you know, what's the dose that you would get from a very strong, event. And when I say strong, I mean if you're, you know, an observer magnetically connected back to the source of the eruption of the sun. So if you're directly connected to the source, you know, right when the eruption occurs, you know, a CME or even a flare, you can get a really high dose of radiation potentially because the energies of the particles are really strong at that point. Okay, so I put doses from a single GLE. So GLE is a ground level enhancement event. That's what it stands for, GLE. So if you're magnetically connected to the source back of the sun, right when the eruption happens, you can get a really strong dose of radiation. And one strong GLE can produce a dose equivalent of several, several quiet years all at once. At Earth, we measure GLE events, and typically the GLE events are measured when we have one, you know, giga electron volts, one GeV protons, you know, hitting the atmosphere. Now, if one GeV protons hit Mars, I think that's, you know, really strong radiation dose. But that hasn't happened yet. We haven't measured anything yet. So stay tuned for that. Okay, well, where does the September event fall on this scale? And I will get to that in a few slides from now. I'd like to pause here. Are there any questions?
No one's posted any yet, so just a reminder to everyone, if you have a question for Dr. Lee and if you're on the Zoom, please do type it in the chat box at any time, and we will take a couple minutes to answer questions at that point. And if you're just on the phone and you aren't on the chat box, please pass your questions along to Kay Ferrari and the others with the NASA group, and we will make sure to get the questions answered at some point.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So I want to sort of transition a little bit, and I want to go back to the time series plot that I showed earlier. There's more panels to talk about. What I'm showing here is the orbit configuration of two spacecraft. One is MEX and one is MAVEN. So if you just focus on panel A here, during this event, you know, both MAVEN and MEX, they're in highly elliptical orbits around Mars. And so there's a segment that is furthest away from the planet, and there's a segment that's closest to the planet. During this event, so if we want to measure the space weather conditions around Mars, it's ideal if the furthest segments of either, for either missions, they're what we call well upstream, meaning that it's not tucked inside the plasma, environment, around the surrounding Mars. So in this case, what we talk about is the bow shock of Mars, or the magnetosheath, or what we call the tail. So that's on the night side of Mars. We want to be well upstream. So if you look at my mouse, that's in the direction of the sun. So, you can see Mars kind of shaded red and black. So the red is to indicate the day side, the black is to indicate the night side. We want to be on the day side of Mars. We want to have the furthest orbital segments of the mission, of the spacecraft, on the day side, but very far away, so that it's cleanly measuring, different parameters, different conditions of, that we'll call space weather. So charged particles, the solar wind, that densities, particle densities, temperatures, magnetic field. Okay, so the point is, during this event, the furthest segments for MAVEN was not well upstream on the day side. It's actually kind of hovering what we call the dawn dusk terminator. So you can think of, if you're the sun and I'm Mars, I hope you can see my hands here, you know, I would like the furthest segment to be between me and you right here, but it wasn't. It was actually over here on my left side. But MAX, actually, its furthest orbital segment was well upstream. So ideally, it could have made like really nice continuous measurements during the event. But unfortunately, at some point during the event period, it had to go into power conservation mode. So the measurements that were upstream weren't continuous, and there wasn't a lot of it. So me and my teammates, we spent a lot of time sort of stitching together all the different pieces of measurements I didn't get from any instrument to sort of get the bigger picture of what was going on when the CME impacted Mars. Okay, so jump back to this. Focusing on these other panels here. So talk about energy particles in panels B and C. And what I'm pointing here is this sort of small feature. You see like this dip, that what I think is a feature that occurs in particle measurements. If you see, you're measuring charged particle measurements, and sometimes you see if there's a CME event and the CME passes by the observer, in this case, the instrument, for example, if the magnetic structure of the CME passes over the observer, you can see a dip in these particles and the particle fluxes. So that's what I'm pointing here, is this dip caused by a passage of the CME, the magnetic structure of the CME. I'm not sure yet, because we need pretty detailed magnetic field measurements to determine that. So if you look at panel I, where my mouse is located, you can see these red dots. These are MAVEN measurements, and the measurements were really sparse. And we stopped making measurements for a few days, in fact. And unfortunately, when we stopped making good, well upstream measurements, that's when the CME sort of passed by us. And how do I know the CME passed by us? Okay, well, if I believe the WCNL simulations that I showed you earlier, if I believe their predictions for when the CME were to pass us, would impact Mars, it would have occurred on September 13th. So you can see in panels F, G, H, and I, these black solid lines that indicates the modeled time series for the parameters I'm showing here. And based on the predictions, we think that the CME was going to pass Mars around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, UT, universal time, on September 13th. But if I look at the particle measurements, for example, if I look at the electron time series measurements, so time on the x-axis, and you can think of count rates on the y-axis, you can see this, you can see a steady increase in the particle count rate, and then you see this really, like, sharp spike here. That's an indication that the shock front. So you got the CME itself, and you got the shock front ahead of it. That's an indication that the shock impacted Mars. So that's one clue there. And then we also look at, okay, so then going back to panels F through I, I'm showing the red dots here, that's from MAVEN. The blue dots are from MEX. So this is what I mean when I said that at some point it went into a power conservation mode. So it was steadily measuring upstream, you know, space weather conditions through the 11th, and then it went into this mode. And so you see this big observation gap by MEX, and you definitely see observation gaps by MAVEN. Okay, so I'm looking now at panel J, which is right below I. I can't see the label. And this is a little bit complicated figure, but the point is to show you got blue, you got the green, and you got the red. It's basically showing the, so you got the interplanetary magnetic field, you know, it's emanating throughout the solar system. And when it encounters an obstacle, like a planet, like Mars, the field lines, they kind of drape over the planet. And so this is what this, and the level of draping, if you have just, so, you know, your nominal solar wind conditions, there's no CME event going on, that draping kind of stops at some altitude above the surface of Mars. But if you have a CME event, that draping can actually be lower. And that's what this panel is basically showing, that the draping of the magnetic fields was actually lower when a CME event was happening. And so, and the deepest draping that my colleagues saw using measurements from MAVEN, they saw the draping going as far down as 300 kilometers above the surface of the planet. So that's what we call a deeply draped configuration. And that was indicative that, you know, the CME was impacting Mars and was passing by. So one more sort of piece of the puzzle for, you know, giving us an indication for when the CME, you know, impacted Mars was from the MSL-RAD dose rate measurement. So I mentioned this sort of dip that you saw in the enhancements right here. So first you see the background count, the background dose, and then you see an enhancement from high energy protons reaching the surface. So you see an increase in their dose, and it slowly tapers off, and then there's this big dip that occurs after that, so after the 13th. So that's indicative of a CME. And so a CME, you know, has a complicated magnetic structure. That's what I'm showing here on this slide. It's a complicated magnetic structure. You know, I talked about the shock front. So, you know, if you've ever been on a boat and you're like, you know, sailing on a boat and you look, if you go to the front of the boat, I don't know my boat lingo, so excuse me on that. So if you go to the front of the boat and you look down at the water, you see sort of this sort of draping of you see this like sort of bow shock, a shape of the water sort of draping over the nose of the boat. That's what we call the bow shock. So the CME kind of forms a similar bow shock with magnetic field lines. And so you got the shock front, and then you got these sort of compressed magnetic fields creating the sheath, and then you got this sort of complicated magnetic structure of the CME. So it looks sort of like a loop here. We'll call it a magnetic flux rope. We call it magnetic flux rope, magnetic cloud. So depending on the direction of the CME, like if it's coming right at you or if he's just skimming you as an observer, you can see, if you're an observer and you're measuring dose rate, you know, from galactic cosmic rays and from other charged particles, so you see the steady background, and if you suddenly see a dip, you know, because of CME passing by, you can get, you know, different shapes of that dip depending if the CME is coming towards you, like head on, or coming to you at the side. So that's what these two sort of time series are showing. Depending on how you skim the CME, you can get a very sort of a deep feature, like shown in A, or just sort of get a gradual feature shown in B. Anyway, so a CME is a magnetic barrier for galactic cosmic rays. And so that's why you see a decrease in the dose rate. It's because the CME was passing by Mars and it's sort of blocking the galactic cosmic rays from reaching the RAD detector at the surface. And so this is the biggest decrease that they've seen so far. And they've seen a lot of what they call these Forbush decreases at Mars from other interplanetary structures besides CMEs, but this is the biggest one that we've seen from a CME thus far. Okay, so going back to, okay, so keeping that in mind, so if you look at this time series here, if you start from the beginning on the left side, so September 10th and well before September 10th, I'm not sure, you see sort of steady background of dose being measured by NSRAT. And they see this enhancement from energy particles of protons reaching the surface. And you see this gradual decline and then a very quick, very deep dip from the magnetic barrier passing by Mars. So in terms of radiation hazards, people often talk about they don't talk about what's the one day dose. They talk about like a longer term dose. So I've seen numbers like 30 days. What's the average dose that you get over a 30 day interval? Well, okay. In this case, for this event, where does the September 2017 event fall on the scale? It wasn't very high, and it wasn't where this blue arrow is located. And that's because Mars was not magnetically connected to the source of the activity at the sun when it occurred, because then you would have gotten the really high energy, what we call the 1 GeV protons, the radiation from that. Because Mars was not magnetically connected to the Flavicini activity region, this, even though MSRAT measured a really large increase in the dose, it wasn't probably the strongest that it could have measured if we were well connected to the activity region. And so the September event actually fell on this scale here in terms of millisieverts. So I mark it right here in this plot here. So it's actually quite low. And my colleagues who were studying this, the MSRAT folks, I mean, for them, they said this was a sort of what they call a medium class event. And it was very exciting, but they think that if we were magnetically connected to the source at the sun when this event happened, it would have been, the dose would have been much higher. So I guess this is good news for people who want to go to Mars and live there. If we have solar events going on, it won't be life-threatening if this event were to happen again. And you have to keep in mind that it was a combination of the enhancement from the steps and then suddenly the decrease in the semen. Those two effects combined together sort of gave you the average dose that wasn't very high. Okay, are there any questions before I jump into this?
Folks, any questions? We've got about 10 minutes left, so if you have any questions, please start asking them now.
Okay, I'm going to keep going. Okay, so I want to now talk about auroras. So jumping back to these time series, but now I'm focusing on panels D and E. Now I'm showing energetic particle measurements, but at lower energy. So panel D is measuring lower energy protons, and panel E is measuring energetic electrons. And part of the reason why I'm showing this is because, you know, you need charged particles to make auroras. And so what I'm showing here on the left are the measurements from a measurement called IUVS on board MAVEN that's measuring the CO2 plus what they call the UV doublet. It's a indicator for aurora. And so what I'm showing on the x-axis is intensity, measured in units called kilorelay, and altitude. And so they're measuring CO2 plus the UV doublet during this event, and they see this profile here, which, you know, if you go from the high altitude to low, you know, it starts to increase in intensity, and it reaches a maximum around 60 kilometers. And this is for September 13th of 2017. So during the charged particle, when you see a high flux of particles, but also when the semi event was happening, and this is what they call very bright, very very intense, or very bright signature. And if you look when they look at other measurements from IUVS, they were able to sort of put together a collage shown here. So here's a movie that's showing the aurora. What they call a diffuse aurora, a global event that is occurring at Mars. So going back to charged particles, so charged particles, gyromagnetic field lines, and for the particles to make auroras, it has to, you know, these charged particles, like the electrons and protons, they they hit the atmosphere of Mars and interact with the different molecules and the ions to excite them. And when that excitation occurs, you know, you get emit photons and you can see the aurora. And so that's what's happening here. And this is very exciting because this is the second time that MAVEN IUVS saw what we call this global aurora. But this is the first time that they got so much imaging for the event. And so one person has asked before, well, what color would this aurora be if a human was standing at the surface of Mars looking up at the sky and seeing these aurora events? And my colleague Sonal Jain was saying that it will probably be green, so the wavelength would be 558 nanometers. And so here's sort of like a before and after of the aurora. So before the entropy particle events were happening, before the CME event was happening, before it encountered Mars, IUVS was, you know, taking their images in little swaths. That's why you see these little rectangles. And, you know, it was, you know, nothing really much happening on the left-hand side of September 9th. And then if you look at the event on the 13th, during the peak of the event, you can see what we call the edge or the limb of Mars, really bright, but you can also see brightening across the entire disk of the planet. So that was really neat for IUVS to see this. And what's really neat too, if I would go back to the comparison of Earth, Earth also saw an aurora event due to the solar activity last year. So you got two simultaneous, my colleague Don Hassel said, you see two simultaneous aurora events going on in the inner solar system because of the solar activity last year. So that's, I think that's pretty cool too.
We have a question.
Yes.
Could you, it's not about the auroras, that's really, it's one of the things you've talked about now a little bit. Can you explain a little more about what it means to be connected magnetically to the source, that connection between the sun and Mars and the sun and Earth, yes. And how does being connected versus not connected affect that level of radiation?
Okay, so let me go back way to the beginning because I think this will best illustrate. Okay. So let's look at panel A. So panel A, yep, Earth. So that if you can see my mouse hovering around this green dot, that's Earth. You can see this dash black and white line here. That's the magnetic field line. So the Earth's magnetically connected back to the sun. So if you follow this line back to the sun. So if you follow this line back to the sun, that's where the active region at the sun was located, and that's where the flare activity happened, that's where the CME erupted. And so right when the CME erupts, or right when the flare erupts, there's a whole burst of particles coming out. And these are the highest energy particles because the acceleration of particles are the strongest right at the sun. Okay, so the strongest accelerator is happening at the sun, and because Earth was magnetically connected to the strongest, connected to accelerate when it was strongest back at the sun, it probably saw, it did see GEV particles, very high energy particles. Now, if you look at the same panel, if you look at Mars, and you follow this curved field line back to the sun, it's connected to this side of the sun, which is far away from the active region, far away from where the flare went off, far away from where the CME just erupted. And so it didn't see none of the assets at Mars measure any GEV protons, and it didn't measure any high energy protons, whether at the surface or in orbit, until I want to say about half a day later. Okay, so you got to think about the timing too. Mars wasn't, according to the simulation shown here, so the snapshots of it, Mars was not magnetically connected. So, okay, if you go to panel C, if you look at the same, you know, black and white dashed field line, you know, that field line is sort of brushing sort of the contour of the CME here. So this is just a cartoon, just a the black contour of the CME. If you go to panel D, I would say that Mars is starting to be magnetically connected to the CME, but to the flanks, we call it, the flanks of the CME. And if you go to panel F, now, you know, not only is if you go to panel E, Mars is still magnetically connected to the CME, but more toward the, what I call the nose, the center of the simi. And here, so if you think of the acceleration of the, if you think of the shock, and it's an accelerator for particles, the strongest part of the accelerator is at the nose of the shock. And as you move away from the nose, the acceleration of the particle is weaker. So you can think of it that way. So hopefully that answers your question about magnetic connection. Is there anything else I can think of?
You said yes. Thank you so much. It did.
Okay.
We've only got just a few minutes left in the presentation, so thank you.
You're welcome. So, okay, I'm almost finished. Okay, so why do we study? I want to go back to this question, like, why do we study solar storms on Mars? Well, because we want to understand the space weather effects on atmospheric loss over time to answer the question, like, where did water go in the past? And okay, so prior to this event, there were calculations made in terms of atmospheric ion loss, loss rate at Mars, and this is based on the observations prior to the September event. And the number that was calculated based on the total ion loss rate was about 100 grams per second. And you know, my colleague Dr. Dave Brain at LAS was being interviewed about this along with the PI, the MAVEN mission, Bruce Jacoski. And he was asked this question, he said 100 grams per second, but he also said that he couldn't help but to think of, you know, hamburgers flying off of the Mars atmosphere. So I like to have this picture in my mind, and I tell people, you know, in terms of how much mass is being lost per second, you can think of a cheeseburger flying off Mars every second. That's the current loss rate. And, you know, what's the loss rate that was determined for the September events? Because this event was actually quite strong. Okay. And I asked here, you know, do we get Big Macs instead of quarter pounders? Well, we don't know exactly. This figure is from the PI, Bruce Jacoski. I kind of stole this from him. But it's a plot that I've shown in the paper. And so it's a histogram, and the x-axis is basically showing what we call solar zenith angle, where zero is at, you know, zero is pretty much Mars and the sun, and here's zero. And then, you know, 90 or 270 is pretty much at the edge of the terminators between the night side and the day side. And so the black histogram show here is just the average from the entire mission so far. And the red dots you see here are measurements made during measurements that are the loss rate that's inferred from measurements that were made during the September event. And the X's right here show the average outward flux. And so the point is I want to make is that this September event, it was above average, but it was a single point measurement that are being made here. That's what I talked about earlier. So a single point measurement is being made in terms of loss, and there could be greater loss elsewhere on the planet that wasn't being measured. And so you have to think of the average loss in the end, and this is just single point measurement. So based on the single point measurements that are made so far, the loss was above average. But we have to be a little bit careful about interpreting this. And so what I wanted to end with was, again, showing the two motivations for why we're studying space weather. But, you know, we're hoping to get more solar storms happening at the sun. And hopefully, you know, if things are lined up properly with Mars, we can actually make more measurements of the effects at Mars due to space weather. We want to have more measurements in order to figure out, you know, what's the loss rate of the atmosphere due to strong space weather events, like when a strong CME occurs. But we also want to know what's the charged particle radiation environment like when there's a really strong SEP event going on, meaning when if we're magnetically connected to the source back of the sun and we actually get the GeV protons hitting the surface, you know, what's the damage to be done if a human was to be at the surface? So I want to keep, you know, this is the driving motivations for why we want to study space weather and why I'm interested in space weather as a whole. And with that, I think that's the end of my presentation. Thanks.
Awesome. We have one final question, and that was as we become better at predicting CMEs, could telescopes in orbit around Earth like Hubble observe aurora on Mars?
Oh, I would Well, hold on. That's a tricky question. And I'm not an aurora expert because I know Hubble have seen auroras at Saturn, I think at Jupiter. I would like to say yes, but I know IUVS on MAVEN has to be in a special configuration to see the brightening. I don't know is my best answer. I would think so, but I don't know.
From what I understand, some of the auroras are located in a different way than the auroras on Earth and Jupiter and Saturn. Yes, so it's probably, with a different mechanism, it might be a little harder. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I should ask this to my colleagues next week when we have a meeting.
Well, everyone, please join me in thanking Dr. Christina Lee. Dr. Lee, people are posting comments about how they're very thankful. It's fascinating. Thank you for your time, and they enjoyed the talk.
Great. I'm glad.